Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Wow, I am an alcoholic. My name is Ashley. And I'm pretending like I can hear you say back, hi, Ashley, because that's always what puts me at ease and makes me feel super comfortable in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Goodness gracious, thank you so much for asking me to share on our beautiful three legacies, which of course we just heard read. I was taught when I came into this fellowship that if I took the 12 steps, I would make peace with myself. If I took the 12 traditions, I would make 12 concepts of service. I could make peace in the world in which I live. And growing up the way I did, that was something I desperately needed. And I just want to acknowledge that I think Maureen S. is listening today, and she was a woman who saved my life when I was in the 11th grade and living by myself because my dad found it necessary to leave me alone for a year and go drink and drug. And she had 5 continuous years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she looked after me periodically in a way that was appropriate, just, you know, for a neighbor to do. And then she became my first sponsor. I do have a sponsor today. I also have a home group. It's called the Beacon Group. It's in Boston, Massachusetts. It's a three legacy group. It's also sponsoring this conference, or individuals. I don't know if the group is, but individuals from the Beacon Group are sponsoring this. And I have 2 recovery dates. One is the 6th of February, 2006. That was the day I was introduced to the 12 steps, and I'll explain and tease out why I have 2 dates. And then my sobriety date is the 30th of December, 2006. And I want to kind of orient and ground us in the literature of AA, which is really important to me and from where I got my sobriety. And I also want to express a little bit of how I live today and what my higher power has been able to work in my life. And we've got 12 speakers who are speaking on the 12 steps, which are our first legacy. That's recovery, part of the triangle. And so I'm going to talk about the 12 steps throughout the traditions and the concepts, but I'm not going to really focus on them individually because you've got 12 powerful women in recovery who are going to go through each of those steps with you. So I'm going to start with tradition one, but before I start with tradition one, I want to read 2 of my favorite paragraphs from the big book, the 4th edition on page 25. There is a solution. And there's there are also some people from Franklin, Tennessee who are dialing in, which is exciting for me. So hi to all my buddies from Tennessee. And there was a Saturday 5 o'clock meeting that really focused on the AA literature that when I was in early sobriety, and this was because each group is autonomous and gets to read the AA literature that it chooses to read. This was part of what we read before we would write on the whiteout board and look up words in the dictionary. So that's kind of how I came into AA, being a bit of a nerd and really unpacking the literature. So this is what AA is like for me personally. There is a solution. And I also like to personalize the text and say I, because otherwise I can really identify the text for you. But if I apply it to myself, it just goes more to my tender, sensitive heart and it personalizes it. And it's something that my second sponsor suggests I do. So I will make this personal to me. I did not like the self-searching, the leveling of my pride, this confession of my shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But I saw that it really worked in others, and I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living it. When, therefore, I had been approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for me but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at my feet. I have found much of heaven, and I have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which I had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. I have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized my whole attitude toward life, toward my fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of my life today is the absolute certainty that my Creator has entered into my heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for me, which I could never do by myself. I mean, does that sound and feel different to me when I personalize it? It's just like that line that says, you know, deep and fundamental in every woman is the idea of my Creator. When I personalize this language, it's inescapable for me that I'm an alcoholic and I have an obsession of the mind and I have phenomenon of craving when I put alcohol into my body, and that there is a solution for me that heals not only the family disease of alcoholism with which I grew up, and I'm going to read something about our cooperation with our sister program, the Al-Anon Family Groups, but that the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the trauma, everything with which I lived until I got here can be healed by a power greater than myself as it manifests in these three legacies. And for a kid like me, it really takes all three legacies to have these promises, you know, that my whole attitude toward life, other people, and God's universe has been revolutionized. So before I get started on the traditions, I just want to read something that was passed by the Alcoholics Anonymous in 1969. And sorry, that's actually my gratitude list that's going to be dinging in the background. If anyone, and this is concept two, we know how to ask for help, knows how to mute messages. I don't know how to. I looked at it with my drop-down list, but my sponsor has all of us in quarantine writing gratitude lists three times a day, 20 items per list. So that's 60 items of gratitude a day. And I typically don't repeat myself except, you know, occasionally my earplugs. And that's just my sisters in sobriety doing their 60 items. So just think gratitude every time you hear something ding. And what I'm going to read is AA's debt of gratitude for the Al-Anon family groups as a resolution that was passed unanimously by the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous by the delegates. And it says, whereas it is the desire of this conference to confirm the relationship, and the traditions and the concepts are all about relationships, and that's why I need them so desperately in my life. To confirm the relationship between Alcoholics Anonymous and the Al-Anon family groups, and whereas it is the further desire of this conference to acknowledge AA's debt of gratitude to the Al-Anon family groups, therefore be it resolved that Alcoholics Anonymous recognizes the special relationship it enjoys with the Al-Anon family groups, a separate but similar fellowship, and be it further resolved that Alcoholics Anonymous wishes to recognize and hereby does recognize the great contribution which the Al-Anon family groups have made and are making in assisting the families of alcoholics everywhere. The Al-Anon literature, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and will be sharing from AA literature, but the Al-Anon literature was helpful to me in getting started with the concepts of service. And I know that Bill, when he wrote the traditions and the concepts, was living with Lois. They were a married couple, and he did not create these wonderful higher power inspired legacies in a vacuum. And I know that sometimes when he was grappling with language and some of it was really dense and technical, I can almost see him like pen in his hand, tapping his forehead, rocking, and Al-Anon and Lois saying, honey, is what you're trying to say in concept four, participation is the key to harmony? And Bill going, by Jove, Lois, that's it. You know, and in tradition one, where we say, you know, spiritual obedience, and he's and Lois going, honey, it's voluntary obedience to the unenforceable. So there's a symbiotic relationship between our two fellowships, and I think that that's going to come through in some of what I share. So how did I get to these traditions in the first place? I got here because I travel, and you know, my sobriety was very important to me, and so when I would go on the road, I found out that my seventh tradition money, which I was putting in the basket, was supporting websites at local meetings to where I would go. And I could go to those websites and, you know, they would show me how to find local meetings, and I would go to those local meetings. But oh my God, it didn't always seem like it was Alcoholics Anonymous when I got to a meeting in another place. And an example was in a large city, I went to what I thought was going to be an AA meeting, and someone did a lead share. And they said that they went to the library to make sure that the tinfoil from which they were snorting their heroin wasn't bad for their health. And everybody laughed so hard because they thought that was real funny. And maybe I'm just a drip, but I didn't think that was funny at all, because that didn't seem to speak to what I needed that day to stay away from the first glass of white wine and champagne. I'm a sparkly alcoholic. My friend Steve, who's on this meeting, and I just love and adore him, taught me the third tradition, which tells me the only requirement for membership here for me is a desire to stop drinking, and that there's a place in Alcoholics Anonymous for a high bottom drunk like me. And I spoke up at the meeting because what happened when everyone shared after this lead was they all shared about their drug use. And I said, I'm an alcoholic and my cup is not being filled at this meeting. I don't want to offend anybody, but where am I supposed to go if I think I'm coming to AA and I don't have any personal identification or experience, strength, and hope? And so I went back to my hotel room, stomped around the garden, and called my sponsor and just complained, basically. And my sponsor said to me, well, honey, maybe you're meant to be a keeper of the tradition. 112 and go past step 12 and read what happens after step 12. And that's how I discovered our traditions. And so I'm going to read to you short form tradition one. It depends upon AA unity. And I'm going to give probably my longest share on tradition one. And I'm probably going to cry because this tradition, given the kind of childhood I had, is incredibly important to me. And by the way, when you read your 12 and 12, I suggest take a look at the table of contents because it always gives a summary of the tradition in the table of contents to the tradition before you read the whole chapter. So what this tradition is saying is that our rigid black and white, all or nothing diseased thinking can be healed, and that it's not either or, it is both and. That our common welfare and our unity comes first, and the individual matters too. And in the first two paragraphs in the 12 and 12, it says that we lavish tremendous care and attention on the individual, and we never tell the individual how to think or what to do. There's no musts, there's no oughts in our program. And yet unity is the single most important principle we have. Now, if that were a pop quiz in AA when I first got here, I would have failed the pop quiz. I would have thought that anonymity is the single most important principle we have, but it says unity is. And the other thing that's so interesting is unity does not mean uniform. We can have diversity and still have unity. Now, the way I grew up, I had a sibling who was a prodigy and she was gifted. And I had a mother who had an undiagnosed and untreated mental illness. That does not make her bad and wrong. It means she was sick and suffering. She was also an untreated alcoholic and a drug addict. And I have a beautiful relationship today with my mother. I have the capacity to accept the love she has to give. I call her every single day. She is a tender woman. We share intimacy in the way that we can. She hugs me and loves me and tells me she's proud of me. We have a healed relationship because of my work on these in these 12 steps and because of our sister program. So I need to make sure that that's abundantly clear. But it's also very clear that I, as a result of her disease and the choices that she made. So she saw my sister's talent and she put all of her ingenuity and resources and dreams and yearning and most definitely her time into my sister. And this formed me neurobiologically. It formed me at the core of my being. So I came with my rigid black or white, all or nothing, either or thinking the real way. I was totally abandoned and neglected and saw that a parent could love one child, but not the other. That was my reality growing up. Did my mother love me? In all likelihood, yes. But she just couldn't express through time, care, direction, love, finances, anything. I mean, she started leaving me from the time I was in the third grade in an apartment alone in order to be with my sibling. And she sold me for $2,000 to my dad at one point when I was little. It's a terrible story. And it goes on and on and on. And when I was in the 10th grade, I lived alone for another year when I was by myself. I mean, I don't know how I got food. I don't know how I got groceries. There was no guidance counselor. There was no friend of a parent. There was no social worker. There was nobody. So what this looks like today is I can still have this paucity thinking, this binary dualistic either or, where I don't think there's enough love for more than two people at once. And I know that that's my childhood stuff, but what this tradition teaches me is just like at the end of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we circle up, we just make that circle wider when the newcomer comes in. And the common welfare, and I looked up welfare, and it means the well-being, the health, the prosperity, and the fortunes of a group of people. And this is like super vulnerable for me to admit to y'all, but my husband and today I have the most sacred and fun and lovely and outrageously delicious, incredible marriage, you know, but sometimes when that hurt part of me comes up and like where we are with the pandemic that's going on, we're about to take my bonus child, his daughter, back to the country where she lives with her mother. But we don't know with my American passport if I'm going to be permitted into that country. So the best case scenario is we're going to be together for the rest of the summer. The worst case scenario, and there's no way to know, so we're living one day at a time and practicing let go and let God, our slogan that teaches me I'll know what I need to know when I need to know it, is that we might not see each other for 3 months. Now, what I know can happen to me if I'm not living in the common welfare of tradition one is that I'm going to think when he's with her, he only loves her and he doesn't love me because there's not enough love for everybody, because that's what was modeled for me when I was growing up. So I'm going to have to rock this tradition on a daily basis. So this teaches me to be able to hold complexity, to hold dual thinking, to know it's both and I think as a society, we suck at this. And so the only place that I know it's really modeled is in Alcoholics Anonymous, where the common welfare comes first and the individual matters too. I don't know if that resonates with anybody, but this one is deeply important and sacred to me. Tradition two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. I use this tradition every day in my family life. And by the way, this talk I'm giving, it's kind of original, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good. And it's just my bread and butter applying it to relationships, because I don't serve at the group level because I travel so much. I've been to meetings in 16 countries. They work the program one day at a time in India. And I've been to meetings in Kenya, and I 12-stepped a woman in the Congo who found a sober woman to work with in Rwanda, and I found a sober member in Ukraine to talk with, and lots of wonderful places. But, you know, I apply these to my relationships on a daily basis, which is why I'm giving this talk, applying them to relationships. So tradition two, I weave in with concept four. And I'm going to read you concept four. And sometimes the concepts are really dense and wordy. So then I'm going to give you how I interpret the nugget. Okay. And then I also weave it in with concept five and concept 12, which is also known as the general warranties of the conference. And the general warranties of the conference are so beautiful. They are the aria. They sum up the traditions and the concepts as a whole. And if you go away with nothing else, please go away with the general warranties of the conference. Okay. So concept four states, at all responsible levels, and the concepts in a general way are about responsibility, leadership, authority, and delegation. Learned nothing about that in my alcoholic home growing up. At all responsible levels, we ought to maintain a traditional right of participation, allowing a voting representation in reasonable proportion to the responsibility that each must discharge. The nugget. Right of participation. Participation is the key to harmony. I have to participate in order for the group to be harmonious. Okay. And then concept five, and remember, we're weaving this into our informed group conscience in tradition two. So concept five, throughout our structure, a traditional right of appeal ought to prevail. Love this. So minority opinion will be heard and personal grievances can receive careful consideration. Anything about a personal grievance, an alcoholic is going to like that. Okay. So the nugget for concept five is, if I'm the minority opinion, I have the right to be heard and validated in my experience. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples. Oh, I told you I would tell you about the warranties. So in the warranties, what this is going to mean is that when I participate, no one is placed an unqualified authority over me, and I also don't dominate the group, that the decision-making is democratic in thought and action, that I'm not punitive or nasty in how I participate in making a group decision, and that I don't like incite controversy and act up and get all wild about it. So I'm going to use a very current example. I'm going to start with a really little baby example. So yesterday, a whole bunch of kids, I'm living in a house with nine people. We're sheltered in a small farmhouse. My husband and me were staying with our brother and sister-in-law and their four girls. And we met another family yesterday. So there were about 11 of us all together. And when we finished rock climbing, all of a sudden we stopped at the lake. And I was like, I don't want to go to the lake. Why are we going to the lake? And we went to the lake. And by the way, it was magnificent. We're in Switzerland. The mountains are high. The lake is shimmering. The children are swimming. It's like memories of a lifetime kind of stuff for these children. And I'm pouting. And I finally say to my husband, can you give me some more information about how we ended up at the lake? So he tells me the whole story. And I say, I would have gone along with the group. I just wish that I had been consulted. Because when I'm the minority opinion, concept five, and I've had the right to participate, concept four, and no one has been placed an unqualified authority over me, and I've had an informed group conscience, tradition two, then I can accept the group and I don't get a resentment and have to do a 10th step on it. Tiny little example, but that's how I live these concepts and traditions. Now, here's a bigger example. So we talk in tradition six in Al-Anon about how we cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't use that word in AA in tradition six, but I did read how we cooperate as fellowships in the gratitude declaration from 1969. So one of the things that my husband and I do is we cooperate very closely with his child's mother. We co-parent and cooperate. We don't endorse, affiliate, or finance, but we cooperate, which means we work together for a common good, tradition one, common welfare. And when we're getting ready to take her back to Germany, where she lives some of the time with her mother, my husband and I sat down and we really sketched out what this was going to look like, because we're going to spend 6 weeks in Germany cooperating. And we needed to talk about what day we were going to travel, what mode of transportation we were going to take, because there's a pandemic, and importantly, where we were going to stay. And my husband is a very communal spirit. He has lived in communes most of his life. And he said, well, why don't we just stay with Nina and her mom? And I said, and this is me sitting on the bench in the backyard. Ashley, this is an informed group conscience. We all have access to the same information. And by the way, informed is not included in the tradition, but it is included in our service manual. So everyone has access to the same information. I know what her living situation looks like. It's basically a commune too. And that impedes my step 11 in the morning. And nobody wants to mess with me unless I've had a proper step 11 and conscious contact with the God of my understanding in the mornings. So I'm thinking tradition two, you're participating in a group conscience right now. And I'm thinking concept four, I need to participate in this conversation in order for there to be harmony. And concept five, I am the minority voice. I don't want to live in a commune with my husband, his child, and the child's mother and her roommate and the roommate's kid. this is not a happy scenario for me. And if I don't participate and I don't use my voice, I am allowing them to be placed in unqualified authority over me because I'm making myself a victim. And so I had to find the guts to speak up and say, I would prefer we get our own place and rent an apartment near the child. And he said, perfect, that's fine. So easygoing. I worked myself into a tizzy and he's so easygoing. And then I said, and I have some more information about why, if you would like that. And he did want the information. And the information for me is all about the 12 steps, because if I have that group setting, I get very powerless. My emotions get unmanageable. I would much rather have my own place and step in and step out, blah, blah, blah. So that's just an example of how I'm sitting on a bench in the backyard, having a conversation about family affairs. And I'm running through tradition 2, concept 4 and 5, and thinking about the general warranties of the conference. So tradition 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. I referenced that a little bit as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The way I think about this tradition in terms of myself is that my self-esteem, my dignity, you know, only I can say who I am, you know, and I'm a woman of value and worth. I did not grow up that way as a kid. And so it's been a journey, you know, to come to myself as an empowered woman with agency and dignity and respect. You know, no one can tell me today who I am. That's between the God of my understanding and me. And I get that through the spiritual awakening that I have as the result of the 12 steps. And so that's a way that the principles of the 12 steps weave in with the traditions. And by the way, all of these principles, all 36 of them, they resonate with each other. They weave in beautifully. The way this applies to my marriage is that I'm in this marriage because I say I am. And, you know, we're married spiritually, emotionally, and physically, and mentally. There are no outside issues, which is tradition 10. And this marriage is not a legal instrument, which is concept 7, like in the eyes of the government. We're not married. We don't have a piece of paper, but we say we're married, and that's what matters to us. We met in Africa, in the Congo, in the rainforest, in the bush with primates, and, you know, some beautiful little kids had a dirty piece of string that they gave us, and he spontaneously wrapped it around this finger, and that's our wedding ring. I don't have it on because it's really fragile and starting to break. But we're self-defined, and that's the dignity of this tradition. It is self-definition. I'm an alcoholic because I say I am. No one can tell me I'm not. I'm a married woman because I say I am, and no one can tell me that I'm not. Tradition 4, life-changing. For me, each group has but one primary that's 5. Each group should be autonomous and except in matters affecting another group or AA as a whole. So a lighthearted story about this. There are two basic things. First, I want to say about tradition 4, responsibility and freedom. I have responsibility to make sure that I don't do anything that harms another group, but it also means that groups have the freedom to conduct their affairs so long as their affairs are in alignment with Alcoholics Anonymous's spiritual principles. This tradition to me relates to using only literature that is produced by AA and the Grapevine. And if someone is using literature that's not produced by the Grapevine or AA in a meeting, I will gently speak up. If there are newcomers present, that's my litmus test, because I don't want the newcomer inadvertently to think that we use other literature. And I will say something like, you know, during this 1 hour of the meeting, we're asked only to use the literature that is produced by our fellowship. The other stuff may be great. We just don't have an opinion on it. It's not that we approve or disapprove. Learned that from Steve. We just don't have an opinion. And I'm not going to go into that because I want to focus on relationships. So a lighthearted way that I applied this tradition in the first place was, you know, my mother overcooks her asparagus and I realized, oh my God, her house is autonomous. She gets to do it her way. Eat her asparagus without comment. No controversy, tradition 10. Just, she doesn't recycle. It's her house. She's autonomous. She gets to do it her way. But then so that's the freedom piece. But then there's the responsibility piece. And I remember looking out my window of my little farmhouse and seeing some children about whom I care very much riding four-wheelers, and it was dangerous. It was reckless, and I felt scared. So I thought, I'm powerless over them. My emotions are unmanageable. I called my sponsor, and my sponsor asked me some questions. Are they your kids? No. Are they your, is that your property? No. Are they your four-wheelers? No. And she was kind of like, why are we having this conversation? So I had to reason things out with someone else and think about, you know, to what extent are those children autonomous and are those things not mine? But when do I have a responsibility when I'm seeing reckless, negligent, endangering behavior? Concept 7. When do I have a legal right? When is it like an illegal instrument to step in? So I'm going to read concept 7. It says, the charter and bylaws of the General Service Board are legal instruments empowering the trustees to manage and conduct World Service affairs. The conference charter is not a legal document. It relies upon tradition in the AA purse for final effectiveness. The nugget. Our General Service Conference, which is our annual meeting, you know, the traditions are traditional. They don't have legal binding, and the trustees have are legally bound and they have legal rights. So there are two stories that go with this. One is, you know, for those young children, I had a traditional role to play as their family member. You know, don't wear shoes when you come in the house. I nurture you. I love you. When you start your period, I talk with you about it. You know, you can whine to me about your mom. We do Easter egg hunts. You know, I do all those traditional things as a family member who loves and adores you. Then there's child abuse. What do I do? I won't go into a lot of detail. That family gets their anonymity. Eventually, I reach the up with which I cannot put. I report to Child Protective Services. I take legal action because their autonomy does not go so far as to include behavior that makes me responsible on a legal level. And eventually one of those children was given to me by the juvenile court system. And suddenly I had all kinds of legal responsibilities. And I relied on Concept 7 on a daily basis to make me a black belt Al-Anon, because I had to make that transition from having a traditional role in her life to being like, no, you do not drink and drug in this house. That's a legal issue. You are home when I tell you to be home. That's a legal issue. I had to call her friends, parents, and say, when your kids come over, there's no drinking and drugging in my house, and take their keys when they came in. And shockingly, maybe not to some people, but to me, when there still was drinking and drugging, you know, make those kids scatter. And to really have the backbone to do those things and to set, and it's two different things. To set a boundary is one thing. To maintain it with those teenagers is a whole different game. I had to use Concept 7 on a daily basis. And I was very thankful for it. Whew. Tradition 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility, outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Oh, Tradition 5. We're not going to get through all these, but we'll just do our best, and God's in charge. A primary purpose, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Tradition 5. My primary purpose is to heal. I've told you a little bit about my childhood, and the way I heal is I work the 12 steps. And the 12 steps, what are they? The 12 and 12 tells me that they are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, will expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to live usefully and happily whole. And you've got wonderful speakers on the 12 steps, so I will leave it to them to unpack the 12 steps in more detail. But I have taken them. You know, what my drinking looked like, I didn't go the route of my mom and dad because it was ugly. There were guns involved. I got called a CUNT. There were fist fights. When the police came, I sat on the porch and wondered why they weren't taking me with them. So that is not what my alcoholism looked like. You know, my alcoholism looked like ball gowns and jewelry and champagne. But I did crazy stuff. You know, I had profound insights, but nobody was around to talk to. So I called myself and left myself messages on the voicemail, sharing all my wisdom. And then I'd leave, you know, check my voicemail the next day and be like, what gibberish BS is this? Like, wackadoodle and make myself sick so I wouldn't have hangovers. I put all that in my first step, including my attitudes toward alcohol. And then, you know, when my sponsor heard that, she said, "Ashley, that's not sane behavior." And I was at step two. And I'll just tell you a little bit about my step five, my first step five. I put a lot of stuff from my childhood on step five that was not my fault. And so the woman who heard my step five helped me tease out the things for which I was not responsible, because I had been a blameless, vulnerable, needy, defenseless child, and the things for which I was responsible as an adult. So that was a very interesting experience. And I loved my step eight, because I did three columns: willing to make amends now, willing to make amends soon, and the not no but hell no column, will never make amends. And all those people in the never column eventually migrated their way to the yes, I'll make amends, and I've made all my amends. And you know, today I can hold my head high and go anywhere. And I have a beautiful relationship with my dad as well. Today, as he told me recently, that I was his hero. I mean, miracles happen in this program. So tradition five applies to me in my relationship with myself, and my primary purpose is to heal. And that will feed into my tradition six, because as a member of AA, I never endorse, finance, or lend my name to any outside enterprise. But as an individual, of course, I am free to do just that. And I do robustly. I'm a very active member of society. I'm involved in lots of social and political causes. I publicly endorse and finance lots of organizations and institutions. And I do that in accordance with my primary spiritual aim. I'm a survivor of multiple sexual assaults, of childhood rape, and I know the hill on which I'm willing to die. I know what matters to me because I've done so many fourth steps, because I've done so much work on the childhood. And AA has taught me how to do due diligence on the organizations with which I work to make sure that they are congruent with my primary spiritual aim. And so when I choose to affiliate myself as an individual, never as a member of any fellowship, I can do so with a moral integrity that is completely congruent with my spiritual values. And tradition seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. I relate this not only to my finances, but my emotional labor. I should be emotionally self-supporting, and I'm emotionally self-supporting because I work these darn 12 steps. That's how I support myself emotionally. And I, you know, I'm not good, right, and perfect. I make a lot of mistakes. My husband just pointed out to me before I got on to give this share that recently I've been more reactive than active. And he's totally right. I mean, I'm living in a house with seven of his family members. I don't speak Swiss German. So I'm in a much more passive, much more listening role, and there's nothing wrong with that. But here's an example. We went rock climbing a couple weeks ago, and my bonus child and he went to the very tippy top of something. I went for a hike to spend some time with my higher power. I came back to our meeting place, and wouldn't you know, I had just kind of miscalculated how long or how short my hike would be. And I sat somewhere in the cold for an hour and a half waiting for them. That was a decision I made. I could have rejoined him up at the top where the child and he went. I could have resumed my hike. Instead, I chose not to be emotionally self-supporting and to sit there like a bump on a log for an hour and a half in the cold. Not a good example of tradition seven. I've been very passive and very reactive, and I could take a look at how I'm working this tradition in my life right now. Not very well. And I kind of want to blend six and seven, because this also means that I don't loan money to people. I don't do other people's emotional labor. I don't work the steps for them. I guide them through the steps. An exception is the young person who I took in. She is in the pokey right now. And I've always told her that I will pay for treatment, education, and medical care. Those are the three things I'm willing to pay for the young people in my life. But I don't co-sign their bullshit. I won't pay for their disease. And I won't loan them money. But those are my boundaries around what I will pay for. Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. So when I told you I'm Ashley, I'm an alcoholic, I told you everything about me that you need to know. You don't need to know my profession, my educational status, if I drove in a car, got a ride, you know, came on a bus. None of that matters. I am, and it links into Tradition 11 and 12 about anonymity. We are non-professional when we come in here. I don't share with you any of my professional life, professional status, or lack thereof. Now, the thing about special service workers means that I pay fair market value for the people who do work on my behalf. And, you know, because I travel so much, I'm very blessed to have a housekeeper who helps look after my house. And she's going to be very important when we talk about concept 9, 8, and 9. And an example of how I pay her a fair wage, insurance, maternity leave, elder care, child care on premises. I totally do the deal with her. But there was a time, because nobody modeled this for me, and I figured it out as I went as her employer, I didn't give her a raise for a couple of years because I just didn't know that I was supposed to. And when I realized that I hadn't given her a raise, I went back and calculated not only the money that I owed her for the raise that she deserved, but the interest that she had missed out if that money had been sitting in her bank account or invested and compounded it and made sure that she got it. That's what it means when we have special service workers. I don't get anything at discount because I'm an alcoholic or I had a bad childhood. Fair market value, pay people what they're worth, no exceptions. Tradition 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. So around here, I am on several committees at this house. I'm on the dishwashing committee. I'm on the floor sweeping committee. I'm on the vacuum committee. I'm on the folding the laundry committee. And my husband's more on service boards. Service board means that it's a more permanent or slightly more long-lasting kind of service structure. And this just means that I pitch in and I do what needs to be done. I don't complain about it. You know, we're staying here. We put in a garden for the mother-in-law in whose basement room we're basement dwellers. I say we have a lair. Even though we do have a window, it's very nice. And this just means that I do what needs to be done. And this links into concept 9 about good leadership at all levels is a necessity. This is my leadership. And I'm a self-starter, and it connects to concept 7 and being self-supporting. And so there's really, this is not a complicated tradition in relationships. You know, you just do what needs to be done, and we rotate it. You know, sometimes my husband makes the coffee. Sometimes I make the coffee. Sometimes he goes to the store. I go to the store. You just do what needs to be done. You're not lazy and lackadaisical. I love Tradition 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. When I was an undergraduate, my family and I fought so bitterly and so nastily and so savagely about politics that we were all in tears and could not, I mean, it was vicious. It was beyond the controversy that this tradition talks about. And today, you know, I vote one way, my pop votes another way, my Uncle Roy votes another way. And it's not just that we tolerate each other. We actively love and adore each other. We can talk about anything. And it's because I put this tradition to work in my life. I campaigned vigorously for the candidate of my choice in multiple states. My Uncle Roy came to hear me speak on behalf of that candidate and said, "Honey, you did such a good job. That was absolutely flawless." We broke up after the last presidential election. I was shattered. They were offended. But what brought us back together was a cup of coffee and a piece of pie and the 10th tradition. We can have unity without being uniform, Tradition 1. It is possible, but it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of restraint of tongue and pen, which Bill talks about in the 12 and 12 in step 10. And it is possible. it is possible. So tradition 11 is obviously a very pertinent one for me. Public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. So what I've done is I've worked with the journalists with whom I've done pieces, and I've said, I can say I'm in recovery, but I don't say that I'm a member of the fellowship. They're two totally different things. And then I direct the journalist to speak with another member of AA or someone who is at the general service office. And the magazine can talk about Alcoholics Anonymous because the fellowship is public. Otherwise, people wouldn't be able to find us. They just don't say that I'm a member of AA. It's very straightforward. And then I also give the magazine a copy of the letter that AA publishes on the 1st of January, where it says, let's be friendly with our friends in the 12 and 12. And this is not brain science, and people who break their anonymity at the public level, I don't really think that's good, necessary, and appropriate. And I'll just leave it at that. And God bless the people in their home groups and who work with him who don't break their anonymity. Enough said. And then 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Interestingly, Lois found it moving to her to change the preposition. In Al-Anon, they say principles above personalities. That's something that she adjusted. And, you know, what this means is that I can stand for something without standing against my fellows. And to have dialogue, I need to be in relationship, you know, to be able to love my Uncle Roy and have him be my best buddy and take me to and from the airport. You know, we can put our principles above personalities and have our differences on so many things where, you know, to be perfectly frank, he thinks I'm a wacko politically. I think he's actively doing harm. And, you know, he tells the best dirty jokes in town, and he's like, I talk to him every day. He's the person with whom I want to spend the most time. So miracles happen in Alcoholics Anonymous is all I want to say. So we've got a little bit of time left, and we're going to talk about the concepts of for world service that we haven't had a chance to cover yet. So, you know, the traditions were written for groups to talk about how they get along with each other and how members get along with each other and other groups. The concepts were written to talk about relationships between entities, entities like the groups and the General Service Conference and the office in New York, the Board of Trustees, but I find them still very applicable to me as an individual. So I'm going to give you the words, and they're very wordy, and then the nugget as I try to. And, you know, I'm very hopeful that AA will develop like a workbook or a handbook for the concepts the way that Al-Anon does. Al-Anon has 3 books that work the concepts and apply them to personal relationships. And in fact, right now, a friend in California told me that there is an Al-Anon conference going on right now that has 12 speakers on a concept each, applying them to personal relationships. And so if y'all think I'm a total dud and boring, you can leave me and go attend that. So concept 1, final responsibility and ultimate authority for AA World Services should always reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. So for me, the nugget on this one is that as are the words responsibility and authority. And what that means simply is that I am the ultimate authority and of my own life, and that I am responsible for myself. And that means I'm responsible for my decision-making, such as staying in or leaving a marriage, taking or not taking a job. And then it comes down to my higher power in me. And so you may hear some resonance with some of our traditions. And, you know, what that means for me is that if I'm responsible for my life, I'm responsible for working the 12 steps, and I'm responsible for having a sponsor, and I'm responsible for making good decisions. And it's really simple. And it also means I'm not responsible for someone else's life. And so I need to know how to practice good detachment, you know? And, you know, my young loved one who I mentioned, who's in jail right now and has already served 2 years in a federal penitentiary, I have to learn how to live with my feelings of distress about her disease, her lack of recovery, and what her future may be, you know, and I have to learn how not to prevent a crisis. If a crisis is the natural order of events for her, because I don't have any purview over her life. Now, there was a time when my mom, when she was going through detox and having psychotic events, when she delegated complete authority of her life to me and put me in a position to make those decisions about her life. So there are examples when there's a legal instrument, concept 7, when I have the legal authority over someone else's life. And guess what? Other members of the family didn't like it. But my mother delegated that to me. And these concepts teach me about delegation. But that's what concept 1 is about. I am responsible for myself. It's kind of scary, but it's also empowering. And a contrast of this is there's a very popular author. Her book is a big bestseller right now. Her husband had been unfaithful, but he was a good dad. And she was Googling, should I leave my husband? He's unfaithful, but he's a good dad. That's an example of not being an authority and responsible for your own life. And I just want to tell a quick story. I was married for a number of years to a really good person. We had a lot of personal progress, but we did not have common welfare. It's a big tradition, one story I could have told you. And, you know, there was a very good marriage that worked in a lot of ways, but we just did not have common welfare. And I took ultimate responsibility and authority of my own life based on the dreams that I was having about that marriage. And I chose to leave the dreams because I trusted myself so much. Step 11. I just knew that spiritually I was drowning and spiritually I was not being fed. And I have such a good relationship with myself today, tradition 3. That I left that marriage based on the dreams I was having. And if I didn't have that kind of responsibility and authority in my own life, I wouldn't have been able to do that. Okay, so concept 2, the General Service Conference of AA has become for nearly every practical purpose, the active voice and the effective conscience of our whole society and its world affairs. The nugget. In Al-Anon, it just says the Al-Anon family groups have delegated complete administrative and operational authority to their conference and its service arms. All this means, after all of that talk about being responsible for myself, I can't do it alone. So the service, the groups are responsible for AA, but we have a service conference, right? Because the groups can't run Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. What this means is I need help in my life. I need my sponsor. I need my spouse. I need my network of friends. I need my sense of belonging and purpose in the world. I just listened to an outside book on loneliness, and I was reminded of the three kinds of networks that I need to meet my sense of safety, belonging, and purpose. And, you know, I need help getting my taxes done. I need help with an attorney when I have a legal instrument that needs drawn up. You know, I need grocery stores to be able to buy my food. There's just a zillion practical ways in which we all need help. I need help when I need my car fixed. I don't exist in a vacuum. And I also need to be careful not to I need to be careful not to overstep and help, not overhelp other people. So all these things can be flipped. I'm not really taking the time to flip these things, but things can be flipped. So I've got a couple of stories about concept 3. To ensure effective leadership, we should endow each element of AA, the conference, the General Service Board, and its executive corporation, staffs, committees, and executives with the right of decision. Right of decision makes effective leadership possible. That's the nugget. So my lovely, beautiful housekeeper with whom I've been for 20 years, I have endowed her with the right to make decisions in my absence. I've delegated that authority to her, and she knows that she has that authority and she has that confidence. I'm not going to second guess her. I'm not going to shame her. I'm not going to punish her. I was in Madagascar, maybe. A kitty cat got sick. She had to put the cat down. I came home. I got the news. I said, that must have been so tough for you. Thank you for doing it with tenderness and compassion. She had the right to make that decision in my absence. Period. End of story. No, how dare you? That's my animal. Let me see the records. What did the vet say? Of course I grieved. Of course I was shocked. Of course I was horrified. I wasn't there. She had the right to make that decision. Current example, when my husband came home to Switzerland to ski for our spring break, US closed the border to his visa. Every time I looked at the news, my guts went on fire. I couldn't get in touch with him. He was on the top of a mountain. And my instincts told me, you better get to Switzerland as fast as you can, because if they close their borders, we're going to be separated indefinitely. I had to take that decision without consulting him, but we are empowered in our relationship to make decisions that are right for us. And we had touched base about this, like if he came back and he had to be quarantined and brought Nina with him. And we had sort of sketched out some different possibilities because the pandemic was just breaking when he was leaving. And sure enough, I came and the border to Switzerland closed the next day. And thank God we've been together this whole time. I had the right to make a decision while he was absent. And that's the right of decision makes effective leadership possible. We talked about participation is the key to harmony, concept 4. We talked about the rights of petition and appeal. We've got about 8 minutes left. I want to skip ahead to concept. Let's do leadership. Good service leadership at all levels is indispensable for our future functioning and safety. Primary world service leadership, once exercised by the founders, Bill and Bob, must necessarily be assumed by the trustees. So leadership, what this means to me is that this means a lot of different things. You know, as Bill famously says in an essay on leadership, which I suggest everyone read, a good idea can come from anywhere. Leaders should be agile, all that kind of stuff. But what this means to me personally is that I lead in my own life. You'll hear this as a theme that goes across me sharing these traditions and concepts. I lead in my own life by waking up every day and connecting with my higher power, by reading my recovery literature, by journaling. I write down my 10th step in the mornings. I reflect on it at night before I go to sleep, and then I write it down. By connecting with my sponsor, by trying to help other women, although I don't have any sponsees right now, which is seriously problematic, so I could use some sponsees. Thank you and please. And I try to help other women become leaders in their own life, to achieve agency and to empower them, you know, to heal from whatever might their story is from which they would like to be healed. And I help people face things and to find their own solutions. That's how, one of the ways I define leadership. And to bring the traditions and concepts into their life. That's kind of how I define, that's how I like leadership. And That's simple for me about leadership. I mean, obviously, having the initiative to make the coffee at a meeting, to show up early, to stay late, to speak up when it's uncomfortable, you know, to say, to disrupt. And this is just me, but to disrupt something abusive that's happening. I mean, I remember being at the airport and there was a man who was physically abusing his child. The child was like really afraid to go through the big security x-ray. And everyone was standing there watching this man physically abuse his child. There were people in uniform. There were people with other children. No one said anything. And it's just who I am. And immediately, I mean, I turned clammy. My underarms started to sweat. My hands trembled. And I just stepped forward and I said, sir, please excuse me, but I would really like to support you not to treat your child that way. And the child started to cry and he stopped, you know, shit. And, but that's a form of leadership for me, you know, to say the uncomfortable thing and to disrupt inappropriate behavior when I see it. And so that's, for me, practicing concept. 10. I'm going to do concept 10 real quick. Every service responsibility should be matched by an equal service authority with the scope of such authority well-defined. What this concept means to me is that with my bonus child, I'm very clear that she has a mother and that it's not my job to take her mother's place. I have a unique and special role. What this means, the nugget, no double-headed management. So I support the mothering and the fathering that the mother and the father have defined and have agreed upon. My role is to be this extra person who nourishes and plays with her. You know, she wants me in the bed at night to help her fall asleep. Absolutely. She wants to get in the bed and cuddle in the morning and wake up. Absolutely. I'm there as this extra person to give her support and adoration and fun. But, you know, the mother cuts the hair. Back off, AJ. Don't cut the hair. You know, I respect the boundaries that they have. But I'm there to totally fill in the gaps. And there was this really extraordinary moment we had, and this goes back to tradition 6 and cooperation and tradition 1 and common welfare. We spend the month of July hiking in the Alps. And my husband made this beautiful scrapbook for his daughter with the pressed wildflowers and the little things and just tactile, colorful scrapbook. And the mom and I and my husband and the child and all, we were sitting together going through the scrapbook. And I was like, this is the way it's supposed to be. This is the way it's supposed to be. This is common welfare. This is unity. This is personal progress for the greatest number. Beautiful. We are not people who would normally mix. And we are just about out of time. So I don't really have time to tell you about how I've delegated a complete administrative authority of my house to my housekeeper. But that's concept 11, which teaches me not to snoopervise and to let her do her best, to get the painters, to get the plumber, and blah, blah, blah. So I'm just going to read to you the aria of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I call it, concept 12. And as I said, if I leave you with only one thing, I hope this will make an impression on your spirit. And if there's only one thing that you might try to take and practice in your relationships, may it please be the general warranties of the conference. And let's see if we could maybe change this to relationships. Let me see if I can try this. Our relationships shall observe the spirit of AA tradition, taking care that they never become the seat of perilous wealth and power, that sufficient operating funds and reserve be its prudent financial principle, that no relationship place any of its members in a position of unqualified authority over others, that relationships reach all important decisions by discussion, vote, and whenever possible, substantial unanimity, that in our relationships, its actions never be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy, and that our relationships never perform any acts of government, and that like the society it serves, our relationships will always remain democratic in thought and action. So in closing, as I mentioned, you know, I got here the hard way. My great-grandmother murdered my great-grandfather, and then she burned down the family business. She was this flophouse street drunk, and then she went on to raise my grandmother, who married an alcoholic. I had an uncle who attempted infanticide and managed to hang himself. My family story is a tragic one, and that's the consciousness in which I was born and raised. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was damaged and I was broken. And it is these three legacies that has reparented and rebirthed me into a woman today who has an extraordinary life and is a relationship that lives these principles and these legacies. I can honestly say that My marriage lives by the words that I just read you, and it's a thing of wonder and delight. So thank you so much for the chance to share with you a little bit about our three legacies. As I said, I just totally made this up. I have no guide in this. I just read it and lived it and shared it with you. So thanks for trusting me.